You're listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me Michael Oliver once again. It's OliverMSA.com, OliverMSA.com, to sign up for Michael's excellent work. And he provides a couple of different options for you to subscribe to. The weekly report is a main report that he puts out, but he puts out reports during the week when there are very significant changes in the market. They're very timely reports that he puts out. And then there's a gold and silver report as well, which is excellent. They're all great, and they're all have been very, very helpful to me over the last number of years. So thank you again, Michael, for coming on with us today. It's really always good to have you here. I want to ask you, in your headline last week on the weekly, it's the weekend 360 report, you said U.S. stocks, the situation ripens. What do you mean by ripens?
Well, technically, we think they're in the process of topping. One of the key factors in defining a top is when your leadership fails. And not necessarily so obvious on price charts, but on a relative performance basis. If you go back and look at major tops in the stock market, let's say the 2000.com top, the NASDAQ 100, which reflected that leadership back then, began to drop in price, not drastically, but while the S&P didn't so much. In other words, it, relative performance basis, it started to collapse. In fact, if you just plot a spread between the one and the other, NASDAQ and the S&P, you see that the leadership, which had been the dot-com, the Internet, so forth, was relatively collapsing to the broad market. So the broad market kept saying, oh, gee, we're fine. In fact, that occurred, by the way, in the first and second quarter of 2000. And by August of 2000, S&P was back up near its highs, ignoring the loss of leadership. Mm-hmm. The same thing occurred in 2006 and 7, when your leadership then had been financials and home builders, especially. Mm-hmm. They collapsed in relative performance and actually started down in net trend well before the market topped. But the market said, oh, no, we don't care about that. And Bernanke reassured, he says, there's no housing bubble. Okay. Well, there was, and the leadership warned you ahead of time that, okay, your leadership's gone. And it's not a simple matter of rotating to some other little sector to say, make up the difference and, oh, okay, a new leader. That doesn't happen. Well, this time around, we had a real explosion in the tech sector, particularly, you know, Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, Google, and Facebook last summer. Vertical price action, much more so than the S&P. So your leadership was very strong. But since then, the spread between the NASDAQ and the S&P has virtually collapsed. And it shows up in the not so much on the price charts, but in the difference between the two when you measure them. Now, some people have noticed that, but they've said, oh, it doesn't matter. You know, again, the same story. There's other sectors doing well. Financials are doing well now and so forth and so on. We think they're denying reality. Now, when we look at the technicals of the S&P, the broad market, it is dancing, literally dancing, on what we consider our first sell triggers. Yet last week and the prior week, traded down to our sell numbers, didn't close the week below them, and then rallied. Like, ooh, you know, it knew something was there. We use the word inevitable in our weekend report. We think now that structure has been set, it's just a matter of which week in the next probably 3 or 4 weeks, does the S&P finally break that? In which case, you start to get your net trend downside. And, of course, anybody in other markets has to then say, well, what does that mean for the T-bonds? For
example, right, exactly. Debt. My next question, yeah.
Well, you know, interest rates have been rising. Bonds have been selling off. In fact, bonds, T-bond futures, made their highest monthly close, I think it was July, and then August. Oh, coincident with gold. and they both declined, T-bonds more so than gold. But T-bonds are now set technically for a very sharp rally, meaning a drop in rates. Now, why would you have a drop in rates if you have commodity price inflation, which is pretty much accepted now, finally, that we do have that? Because there's an asset manager flow of capital, of those managers who doubt the sustainability and viability of the stock market at this point. And when they have that doubt, where do they move their money? Well, they tend to move it into government bonds, especially long end, and they tend to move it into gold. And I think what we're seeing now is the T-bonds are starting to catch up to gold's upturn. And those two markets turning up is an indication that the stock market's probably about to turn down. Now, I don't think there's going to be a stock market crash. I think we had that in March last year. I think if you start a bear market now in stocks, it's going to be more of a layered type event. Like most stock market tops, in fact, aren't crashes. The 2000 top wasn't. It went down in layers. The 2007-2008 bear market only got crash effect at the tail end of the market. So I think if we top now in stocks, it's not some drastic overnight, you know, they pull the rug out from under it. It's more of a confusing downturn. Which, you know, in other words, every time you drop and it goes back up a bit, the longs say, oh, it was a bargain. So it fools them all along the way. Meanwhile, watch gold and T-bonds. But T-bonds right now, I think, are very important. They're starting to break out. And if they break out on our momentum technicals, I think it's reaffirming gold at the present time. Because T-bonds are in sync with gold at the present time. I think that linkage between T-bond price direction and gold price direction will change. But I don't think it's going to change now. I think for the next couple quarters, it's probably still going to be in sync. At some point, we're going to have the event where T-bonds go down, meaning rates really go up because of the inflation, and gold continues upside, whereas T-bonds go down. But we're not there yet. But anyway, the real big event right now is something very few people are looking at.
The dollar.
Yep, and the euro. The euro is more than 57% of the dollar index is weighting. So watch the euro. Our very long-term momentum work turned positive on the euro and negative on the dollar back in early 2017. And at that point forward, basically, the price level at which momentum said, okay, euro is now going to go up, dollar down, basically they never really got much back below those levels in the euro or back above them in the dollar. But they didn't collapse either. Dollar didn't collapse. It just went down about 10% 2018. Rallied back up to about where our sell level was last year, and then collapsed again back to the bottom end of its multi-year range. And if you look at a price chart now, I think the key is price. Momentum already says dollar's no good, euro's going to be better. Okay, but price charts are very clear. If you look at scroll up a monthly price chart of the euro futures, if you want, and the dollar index, go back to at least 2010 or something like that, you'll see there's a line on both charts that defines for the euro what had been a floor, now a ceiling. And if you're approaching the ceiling again, if you break through about 123 on the euro, right now it's been the 122s, I think it's going to start to launch because the price guys are going to get excited. Reverse that for the dollar. The dollar has a pivotal level at about 89, dollar index. We're now 89.60. Okay. You touch 89 again, and I don't think they're going to be able to. So I think it's going to start to whoosh. In other words, these two quiet markets, the major foreign exchange markets, which have not been volatile on a percentage basis for at least 5 or 6 years, are suddenly going to get noisy. And I think that's going to have wave effects on a lot of assets and be a second, a seconding of the gold upside. The weak dollar. We'll be saying, yep, okay, you knew all along I was going down. You didn't wait for me. I think we're at that point.
Well, if the dollar gets weak, then that, you know, as you say, it might ding gold higher, silver, I would think commodities in general, right?
It'll help
we might see another.
As well.
And then you're going to have, again, more inflationary concerns, which is going to put pressure on the Fed to continue to print more money to try to hold interest rates down. Michael, do you see. You and I are old enough to remember, I think you're old enough to remember, the 1970s. I'm a few years older than you. But we remember the Fed got behind the curve. They continued to, you know, rates, inflation kept going up. The Fed would allow rates were going up, whether the Fed allowed them or not. Rates were rising. They left them rise. They tried to tamper. They tried to keep them from going nuts, but they were always behind. The rates weren't rising as fast as inflation until Volcker came in finally and slammed the brakes on, you know, put the brakes on. And I don't think they can do that again at this point in time, any time like they could then. But do you see sort of a stagflation situation like that? Because we had this high levels of unemployment. The Fed, you know, was behind the curve in the sense of getting inflation under control. You think it's possible it might get away from these guys?
I think it already is. And I think that when you hear the concern by investors that, oh, the Fed might taper, so gold sells off that day. You know, it was last week or something. Powell said something. That is silliness, because the one factor that you got to pay attention to if you're in gold is the stock market. Mm-hmm. Because the one asset category that has not hurt the Fed, that has not been something they've had to put a fire out, has been the stock market. Mm-hmm. Ever since the March low last year, which was a very brief collapse, very deep, it's been going up, 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 up. So it's not been a factor that's caused them to keep a loose monetary policy. Other things have. But that one has not been a problem for them. What if it suddenly becomes a problem? Mm-hmm. What if it suddenly starts down and, you know, the 6 months we find that S&P is, oh, it's down 20% off its highs. No, not collapsing, but, you know, uh-oh. Because it's a psychological thing, and Bernanke wrote a paper on this. I keep citing this in many interviews. In 2003, he wrote a paper on why the Fed needs to defend the stock market, primarily for psychological reasons, to keep people spending money rather than saving money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was explicit in his argument. And, well, if the stock market becomes a negative now, that's suddenly going to talk of Fed tapering is just gone. And plus, you'll have more fiscal policies as well. Because psychologically, even if you're not the one percenter in the stock market, you're employed by a company and you see its stock go down, you've been around long enough to know, uh-oh, I might get laid off.
Yeah, exactly.
So it scares you, too. Right. So they have to defend their monetary policy and keep it ongoing if that stock market wobbles, and I think it's about to.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is psychological, but there's also a real reality to a declining stock market too, Michael, in the sense that pension funds and other fund managers have had to go out on the risk curve, you know, because they're not getting any interest rates. So now what are you going to do if you got pension fund obligations and the stock market goes down 20%? And you have an aging population now that's going to demand, you know, their pension funds. So this is another issue, I think. And then we come along and, you know, all of a sudden, Mr. Biden pumps $6 trillion into the system with fiscal stimulus that has to be printed. And there's nobody around the world that wants to buy treasuries anymore at these rates anyway. No more foreign money coming in.
The dollar's also degrading the treasury.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay. The dollar, they'll get a double whammy. The dollar goes down, and their treasury and the treasury value, the dollar value of the treasuries go down, a double whammy. So it's hard to see, you know, what asset classes eventually will end up other than gold, silver, maybe tangibles, you know, commodities in general. Although, if you have such an inflationary problem globally that it really stops commerce from taking place, I don't know how bullish that is for commodities in the short run either. But that's another story. What are you looking at then? Gold looks. I see we're knocking on the door of 1900 now today.
Oh, you traded over 1900 today, so it's interesting. It took 8 months to go from 2050 high close down to the 1670s, and it took you about 8 weeks to get back over 1900. Surprise, surprise. We think that in that asset category, the gold component of the commodity category, that silver is a better place to be. This is a technical assessment, long-term. And the miners are a better place to be than gold itself. Now, gold is the mama, so you got to watch gold. But as gold goes up, those two other, the silver and the gold and silver miners, should outperform gold, and that's a better place to be, in our view. You know, with the Bitcoin collapse, which, by the way, we nailed pretty well back in April, when it dropped to 59,000, it was about $6,000 off its high. We said, uh-oh, there could be a sharp drop into the 30,000 zone. And sure enough, it not only got in the upper 30,000s, but the lower 30,000s very rapidly, more quickly than we even thought. We think that is a, quote, alternative, especially among younger people, is now been dished. And I don't think Bitcoin, even when it does turn and have a nice rally, and it's in an area now where it might build a base and turn up for another rally, it's not going to resume its bull trend. It's going to have to do a lot of work to do that. Mm-hmm. I'm not arguing that Bitcoin's going to collapse like it did in 2018 when it went from, you know, 20,000 to 3,600. But I think it's wounded psychologically and technically. And mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a hard time for it to resume what had been going on, you know, between 2020 and 2021, which was off the page. I think if there's a new Bitcoin out there, it's going to be silver.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Where you get that kind of geometric rise, where you go from, you know, $29 silver, and suddenly you're at 50, and then suddenly mm-hmm. you're beyond those dual highs at 50. Mm-hmm. And well, I think silver's the one to watch, is the new Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, it's the common folks' gold, or the common folks' money, I guess you'd say. Michael, people hear you talk on this show all the time about the big markets, you know, the equity markets, the T-bonds, and the dollar, and so forth. But you also, what people aren't as aware of, is that you also cover all kinds of other markets. And one I want to ask you about, with a couple of minutes left here, is uranium market. Uranium has started to rise, you have provided some charts on uranium. What's your thoughts on uranium at this time?
Well, uranium, we turned bullish a couple years ago, in fact. Mm-hmm. It got very depressed, like most commodities. It was behaving like commodities. In other words, as the commodity cycle peaked in 2011, most commodities went down from there. So did uranium. It collapsed from like $70 down into the teens. Okay. It turned up, and a couple of years ago we turned bullish, and it's gained ground since then, $10 or $15 since the upturn. And our last report, it was about 29. Now it's 31. The real key on uranium: first off, there's no liquid way to trade it. Futures do produce prices on the CME, but it's really not liquid. So we keep track that way, just of the uranium price and its momentum, which is positive. Uh-huh. But the main thing is to be in the uranium. Uranium producing companies like mm-hmm. CCJ, Cameco. There's mm-hmm. also an ETF called URA, which covers a lot of uranium producers, including mm-hmm. CCJ, which mm-hmm. are vastly outpacing uranium. And this mm-hmm. is true in the commodity category in general. In other words, rather than saying buy soybeans, we were bullish at $9.30. It's now up to with 16 or so. Instead of suggesting to buy beans, corn, wheat, sugar, etc., we suggested buying fertilizer stocks because they were equally depressed and mm-hmm. correlated to the grains, meaning if grains turned up, these guys would turn up. And percent-wise, they've done a lot better. Same is true with the uranium stocks. So the better place to be is not the commodity itself necessarily, but mm-hmm. stocks that have been depressed along with the commodities and are turning up, because they tend to go up a lot more on a percent basis. Mm-hmm. I think it's in part due to not just that they were depressed like commodities, but a lot of asset managers just don't buy corn futures.
Right. You know, of course.
They buy things that are related to the grain markets and fertilizer stocks and farmland. There's even mm-hmm. some ETFs on farmland. They've done quite well. Mm-hmm. Where farm acreage has exploded. Mm-hmm. So it's the stocks, as I said, with the gold situation, don't buy gold, buy gold miners, mm-hmm. or especially silver miners. Yes. I think that's the better place to be and for the next several years.
Well, I agree with you, and because of the leverage factor too. And when the metals mm-hmm. go up a bit, and they're in the money, all of a sudden the profits of these miners can go up very dramatically. And the senior gold miners I saw just recently are doing collectively better than they ever have. And I think we're just starting to see the big move.
It's all time highs again. You know,
it is, and the profits are really strong. The free cash flow is just amazing among the big.
I wouldn't be shocked
miners.
By a lot of these little teeny miners. The little
they're the ones that are
assembled miners get bought up.
Absolutely, those are of course the ones that I follow in my newsletter. And I might just add, Michael, there is a small phosphate mine that's moving towards production in Quebec. That looks like a huge winner for me, and mm-hmm. it's one that I cover called Ariane Phosphate, and it's one that I cover in my letter. It wouldn't be one that you would have enough data yet, probably, to make a good chart, but it's one that I've got my eyes on. And certainly you mentioned fertilizer. I think you're absolutely right about that. The world has to eat. People have to eat. That's one thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's not going to go out of fashion. So, all right. Thank you so much, Michael, for your generous sharing of your time today. And we're always grateful to you for coming on and helping our listeners. It's great to have you.
Thank you much, Jay. Thank you.
All righty. All righty, folks, we do have to take a break now, but don't go away because Lynn Alden will be with me. And we're going to want to hear what she has to say, how she's actually comparing the 1940s with our current situation more so than the 1970s. So we'll look forward to what Lynn has to say right when we come back. Don't go away.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Voice America programs are now available on your favorite connected device, including Amazon, Alexa, and Google Home. Through streams with Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio, listening to your favorite show is as easy as saying the show name followed by the word podcast.
Hey, Alexa. Play Finding Your Frequency podcast.
If that doesn't work, try adding on TuneIn or on iHeartRadio or on Apple Podcasts.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.